Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Only the second hour of our show, which features listeners' questions, is heard live from 5 to 6 p.m. every Saturday on WJR. However, both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
The arrival of a brand new Office version from Microsoft in the past has been greeted with great fanfare. Nowadays, it's more confusion. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the host and producer of The Internet Advisor. And today on our show, we're going to be trying to get rid of some of that confusion with Sarah Mitroff from CNET. She talks about the three ways to get your hands on Office 2016. We'll also be finding about ways of helping the colorblind. Welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and we have other folks in studio with us who have been here before, and we're delighted to welcome Bill Carver. Bill, good to have you with us.
Yeah, it's good to be here. I'm kind of glad we made it. It's a little rocky, but we got online.
We're online and on our way. Also with us, Shane Ablin. Shane, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I heard we rescued you from a busy day at the shop.
I'll tell you. It was busy.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
We pulled you away from all that, eh?
Well, guys, we're going to try to sort out Office 2016 today. Am I right that it used to be when Office came out, there was a lot of fanfare because it was like, we're all waiting to see what the new bells and whistles were going to be. And I think probably the last time that there was really a big one was 2010.
The ribbon. Right?
You know, it's so mature. Yeah. You know, the product's so mature. What else can they add? In fact, they could probably take half of all the features away and most of us would never even know.
That's right? Exactly right.
It's way more than we normally would use.
And nowadays there are so many ways of getting Office, and that is the big thing that we're going to be exploring in just a few minutes with Sarah Mitroff. She is a CNET associate editor, and as a matter of fact, let me welcome to our program Sarah Mitroff, who is CNET associate editor. And Sarah, just before we got you on the line here, I was talking about the fact that normally in the past, when a new version of Microsoft Office arrived, it was like with pomp and circumstances, elephants, drums, and trumpets. And this time it's more like with a cloud of dust and confusion.
Yeah, absolutely. And not helped by the fact that they announced Office 2016 for Mac very quietly back in July, and then they brought out the Windows version just this past week. So you're right, it hasn't been a big, huge launch, more of a smaller launch, and with that comes a lot of different confusing options of how you actually get the product.
Well, we're going to count on you, by the way, to help us to sort that out. You did an excellent job, by the way. We're posting to the article. It was called Three Ways to Get Your Hands on Office 2016. And during our program, this first half of the hour, we're going to be talking with Sarah about those different ways and then some of the other questions. But Gary, you had a question you were
gonna I was ask. Just going to say, you know, I have Office 365. In my family, I have the family version. And Sarah, do I have to worry about any of this? Don't I just get it?
You do. So if you have an existing Office 365 membership, you automatically get the updates for the brand new versions of the app. So that's Word, PowerPoint, Excel, whatever you have installed on your machine, you automatically get the new version. So you don't have to worry about it at all.
So I can take off and go to the fridge or something right now and, and wait till the next segment?
Well, it sounds like, Sarah, and we who are Office 365 subscribers are the obedient disciples of Microsoft, I would imagine, in that sense.
Right, exactly. And you're doing exactly what Microsoft wants you to do, is to pay for the subscription year in and year out, or month by month.
And that's one of the three ways in which you can get your hands on Office 365. And what Gary was saying, and let me just confirm that again, is I'm an Office 365 subscriber. Is that saying then, Sarah, that I have Office 2016 right now?
Yes, you should. Usually that comes through like in a form of an update. So if you open up the apps, you might get a prompt that just says, you know, we've added new features. Here's an update, you know, takes a couple of minutes to install. But for the most part, yeah, it should be pretty seamless. It just arrives on your machine, and you really don't have to do a whole lot on your part to make that happen.
And as I understand, that is the big advantage, Shane, that they're pushing, which is that if you're an Office 365 subscriber, you are constantly, even though you're paying for it on a monthly basis or on a yearly basis, and financially you may end up over a period of, let's say, 2 years or more paying more than you would if you bought it outright.
Really?
Yeah, you're getting, well, according to some of the stuff that we'll have to check that out with Sarah in just a moment.
Okay.
I thought 2 years was the deal. But anyway, the point is, with Office 365, Sarah, am I right? You're constantly getting the updates.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the draw for, that's the selling point Microsoft's trying to get people to buy, is that if they add any new features down the road, because they don't necessarily have to do a whole big update to add new features. They might, you know, add something new in 6 months or a year. You'll get that automatically, and you don't have to even worry about it. But if you buy a individual copy of Office, which means you pay a flat fee up front as if you're buying any other product, and you get this thing, it basically has whatever features that were pushed out this past week and nothing else. So you'll get updates to make sure it still runs correctly, but if they add any new features anytime down the road, you won't get that at all. But with Office 365, you do. So that's the big push, is they want people to pay the subscription fee, and that's the benefit you get.
And that, we'll have to ask, what's the advantage then of getting the one-time fee? But Sarah, we're going to get back to you in just a moment, taking a quick break right now. Sarah Mitrup with us. She's a Senate Associate Editor whose article is called Three Ways to Get Your Hands on Office 2016, and we're going to continue talking about more of those ways. Well, it's Foster Brown, Bill Carver, and Shane Hamblin, and Gary Baker, myself, and we're here talking about Office 2016. And the question is, and we have a young lady here helping us to figure it out, Sarah Mitrop wrote an excellent article called Three Ways to Get Your Hands on Office 2016 that appeared this past week in CNET, and Sarah's an associate editor there. She writes about apps, Android, and mobile hardware, and been writing about Office. And thank you for helping us to sort this out. Did a great job, by the way, with a whole bunch of great charts there. Sarah, I want to quickly get to something that Gary kind of caught me on, alluded to, and we were talking a little bit during the break about. I had seen some statistics that said that, you know, if you are purchasing this through Office 365, that's roughly $10 a month, or there's a yearly fee, I think, which breaks it down a little bit to $8 and some odd cents. Am I right on that?
Right.
Somewhere in that range. Then after 2 years, you would be kind of at parity. You'd be at the same point as if you bought it, the package of the Office 2016 for $149. Is that right? Is that the break-even point?
Yeah, roughly about there. So if you get Office 365 Home, which is meant for like an entire family where you can use it on multiple different computers, that's $99 a year or $10 a month. Mm-hmm. So after about 2 years, you're paying $200 or, you know, some a little bit less with the monthly fee, depending on how you buy it. Mm-hmm. But if you buy a one-time purchase, that starts at $140. So right. It really depends on how long you decide you want to use the software. If you're a student going back to school and you know you're going to use it for 4 to 6 years, maybe you don't want to spend a membership fee because you're going to be paying every year, even though you know you're going to continue to use this product. But it all really depends, too, with how far in the future Microsoft even makes these updates, because will you want to buy a whole new version of it in 2 years? We don't really know if that's exactly their upgrade cycle. There's a lot of factors that go into it of, like, do you need this for only a few years? Do you want this software to last for a long time? Because once you buy it, it's going to keep working as long as you use it. So.
You know, Sarah, though, I have 5 computers, so it's $20 a month per computer, or $20 per year per computer. to have Office 365. And I get a terabyte of storage in the cloud per user.
Per user, yeah, right.
Right? So.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is that then free?
Yeah, so if with Office 365, you get all those extra perks, one of which is the terabyte of storage. You also get Skype minutes, so if you want to actually make phone calls through Skype, you get that. That's a lot of the advantage of doing 365, is you get these add-ons, which you don't get with a single one-time purchase of Office.
And I never have to worry about any of my Office products not working, because they're in the cloud, they'll be working.
Yeah, they'll be supported as long as you have that subscription. Right. Absolutely.
And what's really hard sometimes is to back up our email, and that's all done in the cloud now.
Right, exactly. You get that Outlook support. Some of that actually comes free with Microsoft. If you get a Microsoft account, which is completely free, and you can sign up for any reason, you get some of that support. But definitely with an Office 365 subscription, you just get a lot more extras beside Office.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that I got Office 2016 for free, because I valued all the other stuff that I use, and I love sending my kids away to college with an Office 365 account, because I know that somebody's backing up for them.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
something
I tell
the kids
them,
not necessarily.
And I don't let them put anything on their C drives on their computer. You just save to the cloud. It's going to be a lot safer than, you know, your computer that happens to be left in a dorm room or in a study room or whatever. So.
Absolutely.
I mean, like you were saying about the backup, most people, I mean, if they don't have Office and not paying the monthly, you know, they pay up to $9 a month for a terabyte of rack space or something.
Yeah.
That's not cheap. So it's like you're getting, I'd like to think you're getting Office free. You're paying for
that's
the online.
That's kind of what I said,
and you're getting Office free.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Getting Office too. Cool.
Yeah. Speaking of free, we've talked about two options here, Sarah. I want to make sure we talk about the third one. We talked about the subscription, which is Office 365, and then the option of buying it in a one-time purchase. But there's also, you could do it for absolutely free online.
Yeah, absolutely. So Office.com is a lot less well-known just than the regular desktop program, probably because it's been around for a really long time. But so is Office.com, and it's completely free versions of Word, PowerPoint, Excel, a few other tools. They do almost everything you'd probably need them to do. I mean, they're missing a couple of features here and there, mostly advanced stuff, but they work a lot the way that Google Docs works, where you can go online. You have to have an internet connection, but you can write a paper or make a spreadsheet and build a presentation and not really encounter too many features that you desperately need that aren't there. So it's really great for students. It's great for anyone who just doesn't need to invest a whole lot of money into a lot of software, but still needs these tools on a daily basis or they need them.
And then you can use a OneDrive to save what you're done, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Everything's saved through OneDrive. That's kind of a disadvantage because you can't necessarily edit documents that are living on your computer's hard drive unless you move it into OneDrive. But because it's all through Microsoft, you have to sign up for a Microsoft account to use Office.com.
Right.
With Microsoft, you get free 15 gigabytes of storage in OneDrive. So it's all kind of worked together in that big package.
Okay, so folks, what we want to tell you that there are the three options then. Option one is to use the absolutely free Office.com. You've heard some of the disadvantages of that. Those are the online cloud-based Office mobile apps. Then you have option two, which is the Office 365 subscription that seems to be the wisest one. I think I have my own personal subscription, and then I have five family members who are enjoying it, including some who are away at college right now. And then option number three would be to buy it one-time purchase. I have some other questions, though, about some of the things that are appearing. Some of the new things I understand is that there is a feature called Tell Me What You Want Me to Do that is now part. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, I think it's actually quite fantastic. So anyone who's used any of the Office apps knows that there's a lot of features, and it can be really hard to find features you need when you want them because they're buried in all these menus and you're clicking around and you're desperately like, you know that feature's there, but you don't know where to find it.
I did that with headers and footers on Excel the other day. I couldn't find
it.
Yeah.
Exactly. That was me in college trying to find like the footnote feature, and I just couldn't find it. So
is this the replacement for Clippy?
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. If you remember Clippy, which was kind of, obnoxious and annoying, but sort of helpful in its own way, this is a much more streamlined and probably more probably popular way of using Clippy, where it's just a search bar. You start typing in the feature that you think you need. Maybe you know the exact name, maybe you don't. And it'll pull up the menu for you. It's just right there. You don't have to really dig through anything. You can find it pretty quickly. And there's kind of like links to other help articles, stuff like that. They really want to help you find the features you need. I think it's fantastic. So much better than Clippy.
We're talking, by the way, with Sarah Mitroff, who is a CNET associate editor, writes about apps, Android, and mobile hardware. We've been talking about the three ways, an article she has called Three Ways to Get Your Hands on Office 365, because I got that in my brain. Office 2016, which is now automatically part of Office 365. I have a favorite app that I've got to, that I've got to ask you about that I haven't seen mentioned very often. Matter of fact, in some of the schemes here, it doesn't appear at all. And that's Publisher. Whatever happened to Publisher?
Right. That is a little bit more of an advanced feature that you have to pay a little extra for. I think maybe it's just been phased out in favor of other tools, but you definitely can still get it, usually with more advanced versions. It comes with Office 365, and there are more business-focused versions of just Office 2016 that you can buy outright that definitely include it, but some of the lower-end, less expensive versions don't.
I'm smitten by this because that's how I make all the birthday cards for the family.
Yeah. Well, if you get Office 365, it's included.
It is included.
Yes,
okay.
It absolutely is.
It's just not part of Office 2016.
Okay. Now, one last question, and that is for the Mac users out there. What about Office for the Mac 2016? Is that up to date as well?
It is. So that came out very quietly at the very beginning of July. Most people didn't really notice it because Microsoft didn't make a big deal about it. But they updated all the apps there. So everything's on the same page now. And if you get Office 365, the apps are available for you. You can also purchase a one-time copy of just Office for Mac. All the features that you want are still there.
Okay, they're all there. Sarah, thank you for sorting through so much for us. Again, folks, the article is called Three Ways to Get Your Hands on Office 2016, and we will be posting that after the program at our website, internetadvisor.net, so that you can click on that as well. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, happy to be with you guys. Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah. Coming back in just a moment to help all of you who are colorblind, like me. Thank you very much, by the way, for those of you who just joined us in progress. You're wondering, what in the world is going on here? This is called the Internet Advisor, and we are a two-hour program, normally heard on Saturdays. I know with the football schedule and some things, we're going to be shifted around a little bit today. So you'll be enjoying this live segment of our program for the next little bit. And then I believe the handyman is coming up at the top of the hour.
That's at 5 o'clock.
And but we will continue to record our second hour of the program, and you'll be able to hear us helping some people with some questions they have about their computers, which is what we do regularly in the second hour of our program. So if this is all very confusing for you, let me just say you could go to internetadvisor.net, our homepage. On Sunday nights, you'll have a full two-hour podcast that you'll be able to click on there and to hear all that we've been talking about.
And the difference is we're talking Office for the next half hour or so, and the handyman will be talking about home. So
there you go.
You know, we kind of all the bases covered.
We got all the bases covered. Hey, just before we get to our next guest, and I'm just really anxious to talk with this young man. His name is Vincent Fioritini. He's a student at a university in Southern California who has come up with an app to help those of us who are colorblind see colors we've never seen before. We'll be talking with him in just a minute. Before we get there, though, I wanted to quickly touch on something. Bill Carver, you are our Apple expert here. And Gary, I know that you have family members as well that use a Mac, and so do I. How do we know if we have Office for the Mac 2016 on our computers?
Well, I guess the first thing is it actually works. But Office for the Mac has always been a little bit less than Office than the Windows side, and it still to this day is missing apps. But
not much. It's starting to really catch up, isn't it?
Yeah, really. It doesn't have Access, doesn't have Publisher. But if you've got a Mac, you've got Pages. And quite frankly, I think FileMaker is a better database anyway, so if you were to buy that. But to tell you the truth, the easiest way to tell is look at your Outlook icon. And if it's an orange O or a yellow O, that's the old version. If it's the new one, it's going to be the blue same icon that they used in Windows.
Mm. Well, you know what's interesting? I just clicked on this thing, and there's an update going on now for Microsoft Outlook Update. That's apparently going to get me up to the latest and greatest. But it's
and so that's because you have Office 365.
There you go.
And because of that, it's automatically included, so it'll automatically download, right?
Mm-hmm. Shane, what do you have? What do you use in terms of apps?
Thank you so much. 365, mm-hmm. And then also Office, just office.com. That's what I recommend for a lot of people if they don't have the money to spend on an Office suite.
Yeah, because it's free.
It's great.
Right?
It's like, you know, it's like Google Docs, but.
Yep.
Microsoft.
Yep.
You know, speaking of Google Docs, my understanding, and I want to do this last thing, is that in some ways, this version of Office 2016, is catching up to Google Docs in the sense of sharing. Mm-hmm. That now there's collaborative tools that Microsoft hasn't had. And to the extent that, for instance, you can be editing a Word document at the same time.
Exactly the same time.
That somebody else's. So Gary and I can be editing the document, bang, at the same time. And it's
we can be using you know, we could be on the telephone too, but we can also be using Skype on the computer and talking while we're editing. So what did you do that for? Here, no, do this. Right.
It always seems
dueling cursors.
It always seems really cool, right? And you're like, hey, this is a great feature.
Until somebody does something you don't want them to. Wait a minute, how do I stop that?
You know.
You just misspelled my name. Well, guys, I want to jump right now into a conversation with a young man. Ed Rudell, one of our other fellows who's not here today because he is attending a family wedding, sent me a link to a site called Colorblind Pal. And being colorblind myself, red-green colorblind all my life, I was fascinated by it. So we are delighted to be able to introduce the gentleman who's on the phone with us right now, who was the inventor of this application. His name is Vincent Fiorentini. And Vincent, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, Foster. Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you on. Vincent, a little bit about your background. You're still in school right now, I understand.
Yes, that's the case. Originally from the Midwest, but right now I'm finishing up my last year at school in beautiful Southern California.
And what are you taking courses in right now?
I'm actually doing computer science, so kind of makes sense.
Certainly.
And which college, which university?
A small school called Harvey Mudd College.
Okay.
We have heard say the greatest school you've never heard of.
Yeah. I actually have heard of that.
I have too. Yeah.
I think I've heard of it spoken very highly in terms of computer science in particular.
Yes. Oh, great. Then I stand corrected.
I find this is fascinating. College students who begin to use the tools that you're learning in the classroom to take care of something that has been a part of your life. You're colorblind too, I understand.
Yep, that's totally correct.
Which type of colorblindness are you affected by?
Red-green colorblindness. Okay. I think a little more precisely a sort of red colorblindness.
Yeah, isn't that the most common also? Red-green?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think
most people who are colorblind are actually what might be more accurately called color deficient, in that you can still see colors. It's not like everything's black and white, like a lot of people think.
Right.
Yes,
like
exactly.
Things are harder.
And people will say, well, then what do you see? Well, I do see something. It's just that I can't identify, you know, the colors that you're talking about. And as I understand, it's a physical deficiency in the eye itself, that there are certain, among the rods and the cones, that there's something that's missing in the back of the eye to receive those frequencies of light, right?
Yeah, that's correct. All eyes have rods that let you see low light and kind of grayscale, and then you also have cones that let you see red, green, and blue. But some people, like me, will be missing or being deficient in some of those. So I still have the cones for them, but the ones I have for seeing the red light as opposed to the other shade don't work as well, so it's harder for me to make them out.
So you have a browser that takes care of this for us so that anybody that is colorblind actually can see those colors? How does that work?
Effectively.
So tell us how it works.
Awesome. So the app is called Colorblind Pal. It's free on iOS and Mac. Mm-hmm. So on the go or at your computer. And in the future, we're going to expand it out to other platforms. And it has a couple of features, but the biggest one is that you tell it what kind of colorblindness you are. So you say, I'm red colorblind, meaning that I can't see these parts of the color spectrum as well. And it says, okay, I know which colors you can see well and which you can't. So it'll take the color that it sees through the camera and showing you a picture of this in real time.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll say, okay, I know that you can't see these reds well, but you can see these blues better. So I'll take the colors that are actually red and shift them a little to kind of the blue end so that you can tell the distinction. That way, red and green look kind of like lighter red and darker green to me, mm-hmm. but then I can still tell them apart, so I can actually read a map or wow. pass a color test or anything like that.
So now, I know you said you're from the Midwest, so you'll understand my predicament when I go to the University of Michigan Ohio State game. Where am I going to sit?
Oh, boy.
The broadcast booth. That's right
yeah,
in the middle.
There you go.
Gary, sit at the Ohio State with a big O. That's where you want
that's
to
sit. That's where, yeah, never mind. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Let's go on, Vincent. Sorry, I opened up that door.
Okay.
So then, so I, for instance, I have opened up the application, and I am looking at Bill's shirt, which I, Bill, what is that color?
This is sort of a reddish pink, and I know it's got white and black in it.
Okay. Yeah, but it's mostly red.
So now I'm looking at it through my, what happens is, folks, you look at the image in the app through the camera on your phone. And so I am seeing something that I guess would be the color that says bold red or red. Is that how it works then? It identifies the color that's there?
Yeah, there's actually two different approaches that it takes. One is showing everything shifted like I described, so mm-hmm. you can see everything like reading a map. And the other one, if you just want to know, okay, you know, is this a red shirt or a green shirt? Or is this banana ripe or not? Is it yellow or green? You can use the mode that you're describing, and it tells you exactly what color it is. It tells you, you know, if it's red, green, blue, that sort of thing. It also yeah. tells you how intense it is, so you can tell if it's just kind of red or it's really red. And also tells you how bright it is, in case you're not sure about that.
And the neat thing is, I just went over by Foster and I looked through his camera. And for me, who I'm not colorblind, I see exactly the color that I would see if I didn't look through the camera, right?
For the normal mode, yeah, where it's telling you the label. But okay. there is actually an option you can switch on that'll simulate his kind of colorblindness.
Aha!
Oh, see, now that would be interesting.
So there's a compassion mode.
I can walk in his shoes. I look through, look through his rose-colored glasses.
I love it.
Yeah, exactly. It answers the question that colorblind people always get, which is, whoa, so what does it look like for you? What color is this? What do you see?
Yeah, that's
like, well,
right.
Here you go. Here you go.
There you go.
After 18 years, I've asked Foster that, I don't know, 36 times?
Yeah,
at least
I know.
Twice a year.
And, you know, my wife, we were out driving once, and apparently we passed a vehicle that was a bright pink. And my wife said, did you see that? It was a Lincoln, I think. That Lincoln. And I looked at my rearview mirror and I saw a gray Lincoln. And I said, what car?
Now, this program could probably also have a dog mode. I guess dogs are supposed to be colorblind. So if we figure out what colors dogs are blind to, you can actually set that dog vision program and make another app out of it.
Oh, yeah. That's a big seller, I'm sure.
Vincent, hang on a second. I'm going to come back in just a second. Vincent Fiorentini is the developer of this app. It's called Colorblind Pal, and we will put a link in that on our show notes to that site so you can go up and download it yourself. It's available for iOS and for Android, and will be eventually in the future for other applications as well. Back in just a moment to talk more about seeing the colors. I feel like I should start this segment by saying, I can see. On the radio, it doesn't come across quite the same. We're talking about
yes.
colorblindness. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Bill Carver, and Shane Hamlin in studio. And in our next hour, we're going to be helping folks with some problems they have with their computer. But right now, we're wrapping up our conversation with Vincent Fiorentini. Vincent is a college student in Southern California right now from Illinois. And as part of his efforts of learning about computers at the Harvey Mudd School, which is in Southern California, a very prestigious place for computer science.
Yes, it is.
He has applied some of those principles to come up with an application called Colorblind Pal. And we've been talking with him about what you can do with that when you apply that on your iOS device, that it will be on your iPhone or on, I believe, on your iPad as well, because you use the camera for it. Give a little background to it, please, about how you came up as a student, how you came up with this application that helps you, who have been colorblind all your life, to see colors.
Certainly. So going back just a little bit, I found out I was colorblind when I was about 7 years old, when the teacher kept correcting me when I kept trying to draw on people's skin color with green. Which was
right,
bright color, but no, apparently not. and so then you know, I just kind of accepted that I had trouble seeing certain colors growing up, like
right.
kind of with your sports example, playing soccer as a kid. I didn't want to be on the green team and playing the orange team. I wasn't sure who to pass to.
And
I will tell you that my son goes to Catholic Central here mm-hmm. in Detroit, and they're blue, and they're playing the Boys Bowl, 71st annual. They're playing the orange guys from Brother Rice on Sunday tomorrow. So
blue and orange.
So if you could somehow make a colorblind pal that like blocks out orange, that would be great. I know where you can sell a lot of those.
Sabotage.
Keep that in mind.
A portable
Halloween pumpkins.
Okay, exactly. So then how did you go from that, you know, knowing that you had that kind of a challenge to finding something that would help you?
Well, I got the idea over the summer because I was doing some work over the summer and was actually reading some documents that had the normal text in black and then the really important stuff that I needed to read in red. And it took me a couple of minutes to realize that there was some stuff highlighted. I thought it was all black. Yeah. So I realized, okay, yeah. This is silly. I have, you know, an amazing computing machine in front of me. In that case, it was my computer. Now it's my phone. And it knows exactly what color everything is. I mean, it knows
sure.
exactly what it's telling me. So all I need to do is get that technology to convey that to me. So I said, okay, I have the skills to do this. I know exactly what some colorblind people need because I am colorblind. So I went for it. I kind of did some research, figured out what techniques there are, figured out how you represent color. And over a couple of weeks, just, you know, worked on it kind of night and day in my free time. And then a couple months later, here we are.
You know, you mentioned something, Vincent, that I don't know that everybody, well, people who aren't colorblind don't know, and I am colorblind, is that there are certain situations you get into where very important information is effectively hidden from you
yeah,
because it's in a certain
true.
Color.
One example that comes up is when you're at the grocery store trying to buy produce, that's the worst.
Oh, yes.
You know, if it's labeled and it says green onion on it, then that's great. I know that's a green onion.
Otherwise, it all looks gray. Oh.
If they're all in a bin together, I mean, there's yellow onions, there's also green onions.
Yep.
Maybe it's just kind of a dingy-looking white onion. So I found that the app can actually help a lot, but it'll come home with the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Well, Vincent, your site brought up a good point. When I was reading it, it said this is really great for website developers.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. now we can take and say, oh, we got to stay away from that color combination because there's a group of people out there that won't be able to see important information, as Foster said. So that's a great use of it. So every website developer out there should be getting this app and downloading it and making sure that they know what they're developing their site.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, you focus towards them, as my understanding as well, don't you?
Yes. Being a kind of developer myself,
right.
I actually originally made this application for the Mac desktop so that when I'm working on stuff, I can figure out if I should color it green or red. And then on the opposite hand, if somebody is designing so that everyone can use their website comfortably, they can use the tools to tell them what the color code is, which is how the computer
wow,
represents the
that's
code
great.
And how designers think of it.
It's called Colorblind Pal, by the way. So I noticed, by the way, that there was an app that you can download to your Mac or to Windows machines as well?
Currently, it's just Mac and iOS, but we're looking to move okay. on to other platforms soon.
Okay. So if you're a developer and you're on a Mac, you can use that application, download it onto your Mac, to make sure that you're developing properly for people who are colorblind. That you're aware that you may be creating something that's invisible to a certain group of people.
Or have you done, which is just take your iPhone and download the app, and then you can use it, just look through it.
Exactly. You can use it that way as well.
At any website. So.
You know, one thing I like, this is an absolutely brilliant interface. I downloaded the Mac version, and it's great because you just take this window and slide it around. It'll show you what it's supposed to look like.
Hold the microphone near that so that people on the
microphone. I have it next to this other microphone.
He has it next to the other microphone.
But it's a free Mac.
But it's like a window that you get to move around on top of your desktop that shows you what the different colors are, Bill, and how it works?
Yeah, that's what it's actually doing. Is it showing the, as I drag it around, you'll see the window underneath it, both shift and otherwise. It's almost like I had a clear magic tablet that goes over and changes those colors.
That is absolutely fascinating. Have you had any response from other developers, Vince?
I haven't gotten so much response from developers besides a bunch of people saying, oh, that's great. This really helped me. Now I can buy produce and go to the store. So
I love it.
So far, it's just been me working on it.
It's wonderful that you're doing that kind of thing. Now, I'm just curious, did you get to present this to your professors as like a class project that you get some grades for?
You know, actually, I haven't thought about that yet. I'll look into that.
Yeah. Now, come on, guy. We got to get some good marks out of this at least.
You know, the
will do.
You know, the famous example of that is the guy that invented FedEx. He turned it in. They said, cool idea, but it's got to be realistic. You got a C-plus or something.
Wasn't
you got to be able to actually do that.
Yeah,
then he went out and started the company.
Kind of
close, I think.
I love it. Well, you are in that age group, too, of people who have started some remarkable things. I'm thinking of the Mark Zuckerbergs who were in college when they developed, you know, their, at least... We believe he developed Facebook at that time. And some of the other things.
We won't say how he acquired it.
Yeah, that's quite right. So, Vince, I want to thank you very much for having developed this. Personally, I want to thank you as somebody who's colorblind, because now I will be able to see these colors properly. But if for the, many of the people who are out there, if you, you know, are trying to read maps or do things like that, this is an excellent tool, or websites that are out there already on your computers. This is a great way of being able to pick out things that may have been absolutely invisible to you before. Vince Fiorentini is his name. He's from Illinois, now in Southern California, and congratulations again to you. Let's talk quickly about the unique features of this colorblind pal.
Sure. So in addition to the kind of basic stuff that we talked about before, you can actually customize it to work even better for you. So one feature that's been pretty popular is changing the names of the colors it uses. So like you said, that your the shirt you were looking at was bold red. But you might wonder, well, what would a designer call that? You know, what is eggshell? What is taupe? What does this mean?
Oh,
so
yeah.
You can actually change the names to what I've called colloquial or designer terms. So you can say, oh, that's muddy green, or that's midnight blue, or whatever things other people say, you can actually know what they mean, because otherwise, I mean,
yeah, I
bet most of normal people don't even know what half those
mean. Yeah,
very cool.
I only had six crayons on my box. I have no idea what Toby is.
Well, Vince, we got to run right now, but I want to thank you again very much for sharing this with us. Colorblind Pal, personally, I want to thank you for it. But if folks, on Sunday night when we publish our podcast with both hours on it, you'll be able to find the link to Colorblind Pal, the application for your iPhone or your Android device, or down on your Mac as well. Vince, thanks again, and good luck to you as you continue on your course.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. All right. Thank you,
and,
folks.
And the handyman's coming up.
That's exactly right. If you stick around here, the handyman will be here on WJR. 760 AM, the great voice of the Great Lakes, and you want to stick around for that. We will continue to record our next hour of the program, which will be helping people to solve their problems on their computers as Hour 2 continues.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details. And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, podcastdetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, your co-host and producer of the program, and this is the hour where we answer your questions that you've sent us by email. Every now and then, we're preempted on WJR. In other words, we're not there live to take your calls, and that's when, if you get your questions into us by email through our contact form or the comment form, we get to answer them, and we're going to be coming back to do that in just a moment. Well, in this hour of the program, Gary Baker is with us, along with Bill Carver, our expert in the apple world, the apple orchard, we might say. Bill, good to have you with us.
It's good to be here again.
All right, and Shane Hamlin here apple from orchard. A busy day in the shop.
That time of year, right?
This is a break for you being here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice. Not so hard. This is easy. Easy peasy. Radio's easy for me.
This is an easy... I know. I know it is. When you love doing it, is really an easy thing to do. Gary Baker, good to have you with us in studio
it's
as well.
Always fun to be here.
Guys, we're talking about... I'm curious to see how you use Office. Now, Gary, you use Office 365, right?
I do.
We were talking about the last time around.
And I have five accounts, so right. we have five computers.
Right.
There's only four of us. I don't know who gets the extra one. I do, but...
I maxed them out, too. I maxed them out. Bill, how about you?
Well, I use Office from work. We actually had a deal at work, but one of the other things I did, just a curious way to get Office for free, is you go to Micro Center, buy one of their Winbook tablets, and it comes with an Office 365 account for one device.
Wow.
And there's not enough room on that tablet to put Office on, but you can put it on anything else you have, one copy, one place. So basically, you think of it as Office 365 and a free tablet.
I like it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah.
And now, do you use any of the Apple productivity apps? Like, you know, I'm sorry, I don't use them.
Yeah, I use Pages quite
Pages?
A bit. Yeah, Pages,
which is
anytime I need something to look good and quick, you know, such as myself, then I just take a picture of myself in Pages with the colorblind app.
You can do that? I mean, I...
They're amazing, aren't they? Yeah, I got a face made for radio.
Yeah, there we go.
But actually, it is great. It's something, the Pages app I can take if I need to put something together very quickly and needs to have some graphics on or a flyer or something around the office.
And Pages is the Apple version of a word processor that's there.
Yeah, it's more like Publisher. But,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Very much like it.
Yeah, it has good graphics involved in it. Shane, how about you?
I use them all. I use both 365 and Office .com. It depends on, you know, what I'm doing. If it's something quick and easy, if I'm online, I'll just go online real quick.
I'm curious. Does anybody use Google Docs here?
No.
That is strange, you know, and because I understand that Google Docs has really become a competitor for Microsoft Office, especially because the kids in school nowadays are being given Chromebooks being told to go to the cloud.
Yeah.
It's free. It's up there.
Well, I think Office is gonna have something to say about that now.
I think they will now because they now have they're on the same footing with the collaborative.
Let's think about it real quick. I know we're in a time here, but I mean, a couple of years ago, Office Docs or Google Docs was like, oh, that's the greatest technology, the latest thing. And
until you found out it didn't have some features that you wanted,
then we went back to using Office, and now Office has what we want it to have, the online thing, and Google Docs will be gone.
I've noticed that with Google Docs or anything like even open source things, people like Ubuntu and various parts of Office.
Libre
the other one.
Yep.
And they all start with essentially what Microsoft Office is or was about 5 years ago, and they all seem to be imitating it. Like anything else, it's the difference between art and five dogs playing poker. Just Microsoft has been working so much better. And this coming from the Mac guy. You know, if I notice it as the Mac guy, that it's just not as good as what Office is when you get there.
Guys, it's time for us to check in with Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Foster. Always a good time.
Now, you
must have ran back home after the game, eh?
Do I sound winded?
Well, you live close enough to walk to the stadium, so that's it.
That's true. That's what I did. I walked back and collapsed on the couch because sat in that hot sun all day. I was like barbecued.
Boy. Well, all right, then we won't ask an awful lot of you today because normally we talk about kind of examples of headlines from MI Tech News, so give people an idea of what it is. But you've recently done something with the MI Tech News feed. It's a couple of feeds now.
Yeah, actually, we brought in a consultant, Mele Ostele from SmartFinds Internet Marketing. Brought him in April, had him look at the whole operation. He gave me a lot of advice about things we needed to change. And one of the things he said was the newsletter was getting too long. It was like 35 stories or something. So we broke it into two. So Wednesdays we put out all the stuff about the current podcast and all the partners, including you guys. Mm-hmm. And IT and the D and it's no longer the digital diva ladies. They call themselves something else.
Yeah, they were having trouble with trademark, I think. So
But they're coming back at the end of October with some new name and all that other jazz.
Okay.
And then we use the Wednesday newsletter also to promote what's coming up on my new show that's on Mondays on the Detroit podcast network, just like you guys are syndicated there as well. And then the Friday newsletter is just stories only. And then even in that, what we did was he said, well, you know, we need to have more art elements. You know, I'm an old, it's always been, the content was king to me, but the new world is you got to have all these pretty pictures. So,
Mike, hang on for a second. We got to take a break, and we want to talk to you a little longer.
I want to talk a little more about it, okay? Mike Brennan with us from MI Tech News. Well, there's just so much goodness there.
I always want to cut in and go, Shane Hamlin. One of these days I'm going to do it.
You did it. You did it just now. All right. That is Shane Hamblin, Bill Carver, Gary Baker and Foster Brown here, and Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. And Mike, normally we have you on to share some headlines, and that goes kind of quickly, but you now have developed something brand new for folks who are subscribed to MI Tech News, and that is there's two feeds. One that comes down on Wednesdays, which is the podcasts.
And and the promotions for the radio shows and future podcasts and all that jazz. Because we're the M2, Matt and I do M Squared TechCast, 3 o'clock Mondays. And then you guys all have what you do as your MP3 audio download is also at the podcast Detroit. Right. So we're all part, and they're up to like 23 shows now. It's amazing how big they've become. And then on Friday, what we did was we went to just stories only. And even then, what we just did was the lead story for the section has a photograph with it and a little bit of blurb. But the other stories are just headline links. And they're really reduced and everything down, made it look cleaner. I'm getting, I got a much higher delivery rate this week and everything else. So thank you.
I was going to say, I really wanted to commend you on the look of the Friday program now. It's much, in some ways, much easier to read. It looks like, for instance, going to CNET or ZDNet or one of those normal tech news sites. And so, and I find it much easier to read and to look for the content that I want there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that was what we were going for. And then hopefully we're going to be adding that video. I won't go into my partner there, David Simon. He was still getting some logistics worked out, but that would be the next big wrinkle we're going to put in real soon, I hope. And then have everybody have their own video feeds, and we can do some fun with that.
Now, just a quick question for you. For a person who is listening to us right now and, you know, hits that subscribe button on our homepage, what are they going to be getting for that subscription? Which, by the way, folks, is free, absolutely free.
Well, essentially, it puts you in my database for both newsletters. You get both the Wednesday, which is short, not very long, and it's mostly just links to audio and promotions. Right. And then you get the Friday, which is a bit longer and is really concise and the best stories of the week and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and that's that's the headlines that people have been used to getting. So they're going to be getting, in addition to the Friday feed of the headlines, folks, you'll also be getting these feeds of the audio, the podcast from IT and the D, from our podcast, the ladies when they come back with their new podcast, and there's a mobile podcast, I believe, in
Mobile Michigan Musings with Mobile Michigan Association of Mobile Association of Michigan.
There you go.
Too many of these acronyms, right?
And then the M squared.
We'll be adding video next after that. So.
And then what about M2?
Yeah, you're M squared.
Oh, yeah, M2. Yeah, we're in there too. Me and Matt, we're together. We're still working that out. We've only done two shows. At least we got all the technical stuff right on this one. The first one was a disaster. But we were screwing up all over the place. But we're all, you know, but we're having fun. So
save that first one. That'll go down in history. That'll be worth something someday, right?
Yeah, you ought to hear it. I laughed my butt off when I heard it. It was just so funny because we were messing up. But you know, that's part of it. It really is. It's live radio. You know, on live radio, anything can happen.
Yeah, it's certainly true.
Yeah, you can't edit it like you can the newsletter, right?
No. You get it. You screw up, and there it is. You go, oops, I didn't mean to say that.
The edit button has to be activated. No, you have to have a seven-second delay. That's how we do it in live broadcasting. Right. You got to have that seven-second delay so you can bite your tongue effectively. Listen, Mike, thank you so much for being with us. And, folks, the good news there is Mike Brennan is now offering you double your content for subscribing to MI Tech News. And again, you can go to mitechnews.com and subscribe there, or go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then you'll see Mike's smiling face, and there's a button you can click that says subscribe. Free for nothing, you now get two broadcasts a week. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good show.
All right. Thank you very much. You know, we've been talking about this part of the program being to help people, and that's why we've got Shane in here and Bill as well to help us. And the way that you get your questions to us on a regular basis here is simply by going to our email link, and that is the contact button that you will find on the toolbar at the top of every page of the Internet Advisor homepage. So if you go to internetadvisor.net, on the top right-hand side, you see a contact us button. In addition to that, at the the bottom of every podcast, there's a comment page, and you can put your question in there as well. One of the people who sent us their query this week, a question that they have, was Pat Nagy, who is with us right now. Pat,
hello.
Thank you very much for joining us. Pat, how you doing?
Thanks for calling, Foster. Well, I wouldn't be doing good, otherwise I'd be calling.
That's right. Good point.
Yeah. Your problem is our opportunity to help you out. So let's see what the problem is you've been having.
Well, this has happened in the past, you know, maybe once every month or something like that. You try to open Outlook. I run Office 2010 mm-hmm. on Windows 8.1. And this is from a desktop. I don't do the Windows side of the things, okay?
Okay.
I play games on that side, but other than that, I just work from a regular desktop. I'm old-fashioned. I try to open up Internet Explorer, and I get a message that says, cannot open your default email folders to file C, colon, users, patent bird, documents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, cannot be opened. All right, and when this happened in the past, I rebooted the computer, and it came back no problem, okay? But now, this happened last night, or yesterday, before I sent you guys a note, and now I get the same message when I try to open up Internet, or open up Outlook. I get this message, and I went on the Microsoft website, and there's so much information, you can't find your specific problem.
Yeah, sorting it out becomes a real challenge. Shane?
I was going to ask you the same thing, Shane. It's hardware, software. Which is it?
Well, it's
a bug somewhere.
It's software. You know, there's something corrupt. I mean, I've seen it where even sometimes there's an email that came through that was corrupted, mm-hmm. that was causing this problem in your personal data file.
Mm.
There's a lot of things you can do. You can run. You know, Office always comes with a repair tool. You can run a detect and repair and see if it finds something wrong with the install.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Detect and repair. I mean, I bought this computer. It's about three years old this Christmas, and I bought Office 2010, the whole package, mm-hmm. and installed it, okay? So, yeah. You know.
So where's the detect and repair?
There's actually, if you go into, if you open up, you know, Office or Word, there's I think it's over in the help section. You'll see a repair option there.
Okay.
That's one option. To be totally honest with you, I haven't had a lot of success with that. It seems to take a long time, and then a lot of times it doesn't do the trick. If you're just having the problem with your Outlook, more than likely something in that personal data file is corrupted.
Can he reinstall Outlook?
That's what I was going to say. Okay. Go ahead and grab a copy of your PST file.
Mm-hmm. I'm a dummy.
No. That's okay. You know, it all depends on where your PST file is located. You said you have, Office 2000? What's your...
2010.
Okay, and you have Windows what?
8.1.
It's your Outlook data file is what it is. You have 2010?
Yeah.
So you have Office Windows 10, right?
Yep.
No, Windows 8.1.
Windows 8.1 and running Office 2010.
Gotcha. Okay. Do a quick search in your little search bar with your Windows for asterisk or star dot PST.
And that's three letters after the dot.
Yeah, that's
it's a file extension.
Say that again.
It's a wildcard search. It allows you to just search for that extension.
So what do? You say asterisk?
Asterisk, and then dot PST, Paul Sam Tango. And what it'll do is it'll search your whole computer for that PST file. You may find one or two, like a backup, and then Outlook be one of them. You'll see that file. That's the file that we're looking for.
Now, Pat, what we're going to have you do is just hang on, because we want to continue to unravel this, not only for you, but for a lot of other people who are having problems with this kind of thing. Bill may have some comments as well. So, Pat, we'll be right back in just a moment. We'll be continuing to see if we can unravel this problem with Outlook with Pat, our listener, in just a moment. I need to tip my hat to Mr. Eric Dortch, who's been doing a wonderful job behind the scenes here. He's the man on the other side of the glass, our engineer, who is... We've had a wild afternoon, and he's been doing a great job.
He just makes us look good, doesn't he?
I tell you what, he is herding all of the cats in the background and doing a marvelous job there. Okay, let's get back to our caller, Pat. Pat Nagy with us. Pat called, and he has a problem with an Outlook file. And he is running Windows 8.1 on a desktop on a three-year-old machine, and he's using Office 2010. And we're starting the repair process or hunting for ways of repairing this thing. Shane, you had some suggestions, and Bill, you had some thoughts as well?
Yeah, I had one thought also, since you mentioned it was Windows 8. There's actually a little thing that's been going on. It showed up on the web a little bit. We're about the best place to ask for things, but then the three of us will look on Google real fast and go, there it is. So I did find there's actually a couple spots where you can go in. If you take your Outlook icon, right-click on it, go to...
Just a second. Hold on. I tried, before we go any further, I tried this asterisk.pst file, but you can't access it because that SIG file is corrupt.
Oh, okay. You can look for access and then scan.pst. Scanpst.exe is, I think, that one you're looking for, right?
Shane? I was told that before you guys went to the commercial break to do asterisk.pst, they did a search for it. But you try to access the PST files and said it can't because that's the file. That's
well, you don't want to click it or access it. You just want to see it. I want you to locate it. That's all I want you to do.
Yeah.
Okay, Pat. So just locate it. So you were able to locate the file.
Well, no. All I did was get the screen, and it's got our two email addresses, and that's all it pulls up. Okay.
Okay.
It just got the little Outlook box in my one email address and my wife's email address. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to save your emails,
right,
your folders,
exactly,
and everything like
we're,
that.
We're trying to essentially do a backup
of
your emails so we have your emails and all the folders that are in there, Pat, so we don't lose
and
those.
The reason I'm having you wildcard search it because depending on your your version of Office and your version of Windows, it stores it in different locations. And you know, my file is called outlook.pst. That's my main Outlook folders and emails. It's in that file.
Okay, so you want to just find that, Pat. That's the key. Now, Bill, does what you're saying fit into that?
Sort of. There's actually one spot about Office 2010 in there. If you go down to Outlook for a second, right-click on it to go to Properties, you'll see a place where it says Open File Location. You want to do that. It'll point right to Outlook.exe. You can right-click on that, get Properties again.
No.
Didn't show
right
there.
Right-click on the icon, which is on the toolbar. Now you say read email message, new appointment, new meeting, new contact, new task.
Yeah.
Microsoft Outlook 2010 and unpin from the taskbar.
Yeah,
that's all it says when you right-click it on the toolbar.
I think those instructions are for something that's not Windows 8 or I think it's like Windows 7 and below.
Yeah, I'm on Windows 10 here, but
yeah,
same problem. But in either case, where you want to find is the Outlook.exe. That's going to be C, program files, x86, and then look for your Microsoft Office folder. And what you're looking for is a place where it says compatibility in the tab. When you get properties on it, you want to make sure you turn off run this program in compatibility mode. That's the biggest one that I've seen show up on the web for that.
How does that make sense to you?
Well, like I said at the beginning, it could be several different things.
Okay.
And the easiest thing is just to back up your PST file,
right,
uninstall Office, and reinstall it.
Okay.
I mean, that's because we can go all day long saying, well, it could be this, it could be that, it
right,
could
exactly.
be this. The easiest way...
I got to find a file to back up, and it won't let me access it.
Well, you don't want to access it.
No, no,
you
don't
wanna
access
just,
it.
I just want you to locate it. That's all I want you to do.
Yeah, okay. So like I said, I locate it. I go up to the right hand, and I pull it down, and I do a search, and I did a search for asterisk.pst,
mm-hmm.
and I did that, and it says, yeah, you got two files, right?
Okay, and what are they called?
That's what they're called. They're my email address, one of my email address, and one of my wife's email address.
Okay, those mm-hmm. are the ones you want to save.
Okay.
Yeah, so what Shane wants you to do is to copy those to someplace
yes.
else.
All right, are you listening, Pat? Because what we're trying to do now is then save those.
We want to save them. We don't want to open them. We don't want to access them.
Don't open them or anything else like that.
We just want to copy them and save them somewhere.
That's how are we going to do that?
Just highlight it.
Do you have a USB drive that you could save them off to?
Yeah, I just happen to have one plugged in, yeah.
You could also just save it to your desktop as well.
You could do that too.
Yeah, exactly.
We just want to save it somewhere other than its current location.
Okay. How am I going to... Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm a dummy sometimes.
No, that's
okay? I'm an old retired guy, okay? How am I going to save it? I mean, can I just drag it and put it on the desktop?
If you right-click on it,
yeah.
you can just copy it.
Yeah.
It says open file location when you right-click it.
Yeah, then that's probably not the correct file.
Right.
Well, I did.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I'm just so I'm saying. I have a funny feeling it may be in a hidden directory. That's why this is not a very. It's not one of those things that we can just boom, boom, boom on the air and do because right. They normally take those PS, those personal, those files, and they put them in a hidden directory.
Mm-hmm. So you've got. I don't know why they do that.
Yeah, so you've got to unhide all your folders and files, and then you'll find it. Because
okay, how do you step through that? How do you unhide?
Basically, if you go to search and I keep going to search because that's your friend. Search for someone that doesn't know a lot about computers. The search bar down at the bottom left corner.
Good.
Is by your start menu is your friend.
Okay.
If you type in there folder options.
Oh, okay.
You're gonna see the folder options. He's typing.
Folder options.
Okay, and when you see the folder options, a window will pop up then that will allow you to hide and unhide.
Yeah, you'll see when you type in folder options, folder space options, you'll see that option come up in your search.
It says, yeah, there's a folder option, there are three tabs. General view and search.
Yeah, you're just going to click on that folder options, and that's going to open. You'll see the general view and search, correct.
Yep.
The view, if you go to the view tab, right down, right in the middle of that box there, you're going to see do not, or it says show hidden files. It's probably checked as do not show hidden files.
It's correct. It says don't show hidden files.
Right. Correct.
So now if you go to show hidden files and just apply that.
And all these faded icons.
Hit apply, hit OK, and just close out of that.
Okay.
Then you're done with. Now you're done with the folder options.
Okay, that step is done, Pat.
That step is done.
Oh, I did something. Wow.
There's the hidden files.
There are all the hidden files suddenly. Now then, Shane, do we go back then and do that same search as before?
Yeah, now you can go into, like, say you go right into your C drive, and then you can go into your users folder, and now we can step it into where that Outlook...
Or can he simply go back to the search?
He may be able to do that. I have a funny feeling the search is not working for him because he's typing something wrong.
Okay.
But if now that the files aren't hidden, depending on... Sometimes Outlook stores...
I'm sorry, I just... closed the window by mistake.
That's all right. That's all right, Pat. One of the challenges, by the way, one of the challenges we have when we're helping people on the show is that if you're trying to step through this as we're doing it, we can run into things like I've got fumble fingers as well, where you suddenly hit the wrong thing. So hang on for just a moment, and we're going to run through some of these steps, and then what you can do is listen to the podcast and replay these steps as well. Go ahead, Shane.
And the nice thing with the podcast is you can stop it,
pause it.
Do it, hit the go again and play the next step and pause it again.
So I'm not going to guide you wrong.
So here's what we're going to do, Pat. We're going to say goodbye to you this afternoon, but we're going to continue and try to wrap this up with some notes for you, okay? If you listen to the podcast, you'll be then able to hear all of those notes at the end of this. But I think we've done a lot of your homework for you already. I want to thank you, Pat, for giving us a call.
Just go over one last time, though, what we're trying to save his PST files, his data files.
Yeah, his PST, his personal data files is a file that stores all his folders, all his in-mail, his contacts, everything.
Yep.
We want to save that before we do anything
else. And then reinstall.
Then we're going to uninstall, reinstall.
Yep.
Okay. And
good.
So it kind of becomes simple after that, but not quite so simple. In just a moment, we're going to be back with Dorothy. Dorothy has a question for us as well on filling in a form. Thank you so much for being with us here. And don't forget, your question can come through to us as well if you'll send us that contact at internetadvisor.net. Well, we had quite a time answering Pat Nagy's question. This last one was about something that had corrupted in his Outlook and was not allowing him to get at his mail. And I've heard Ed go through this before, and Shane, you were doing an admirable job along with Bill Carver trying to help him steer him in the right path. And probably the simplest thing, Shane, was the solution that you offered.
Yeah, basically, if you're just going to use a search and star.pst, once you've unhidden the folders, then you can kind of go into the actual the location where it is. Sometimes it's in your documents/Outlook. You'll see a folder in your documents called Outlook.
And that's what mine does.
And it's right in there. Or sometimes it's a little bit buried into the users. You go into users and then app data or local settings. And then eventually you'll find the Microsoft folder, then the Outlook folder, and it's in there. So it can get a little tricky on where to find that PST file. But once you have it, now, if you have things like Carbonite and some of these others, right, they'll store that PST file for you automatically.
Yeah, I have Carbonite.
And that'll it'll back it up for you.
It's there already, so I don't have to worry about it.
Don't find it. So that might be an easy way to do it. And then what we're going to do...
And by the way, that's step one, folk. All that meant... to do was to make sure you have a copy so you don't lose your past emails and everything else.
And then basically what you're going to do is you're just going to uninstall your full Office suite and then reinstall it. And then basically what you'll do is just create your account, your email account again, just one more time. And then just import that old PST right on top of the new one that you just created. And that'll copy it all in there for you.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's probably the best way to do it.
Or just get... a subscription to Office 365, and you never have to do this.
Correct. Use web-based mail, and I tell people this all the time, use web-based mail, cloud mail, and you'll never have this problem again.
Excellent. That probably is the most important
thing.
That
is, yes.
And web-based mail would be like the Outlook.com or Gmail.
Or Office 365.
Or AOL.com.
Bill, were you going to add something to that?
Nope, I was going to say, totally agree with you there. Is, you know, if you have a place at Microsoft full of dedicated nerds 24 hours a day to watch your email, that's the best way to go.
That's the way to go.
They're pretty good.
All right, hey, let's go to Dorothy. Dorothy, welcome to the Internet Advisor. Thanks for being so patient, but we did want to get to your question.
I have a form that I'm trying to fill out, and it's not a program. It was something that was typed up and saved.
Okay.
Now, how can I fill in the form without having the lines or chasing the words around in the lines? They just sort of push the line ahead of them.
I know what you mean.
So is this a Word document?
I would imagine, yes.
Does it say the document name is at the end, .doc?
No. This is a business, and they gave me a form to fill out that up there at the office.
Does it say .pdf?
No.
If you look up at the top when you have it open, it'll give you the
How did you get the form? Just quick, excuse me, Gary. How did you get the form again from a business?
Yes.
How did you get it? Did you get it on your computer?
No, my son is helping me with my real estate business.
Ah, okay. And
he said, send this form out and fill in the names of the tenants.
Okay.
And that's what it is. So it's something that they use all the time.
How did that form get to you then? Did it get to you on your computer?
He made up a bunch of the forms and emailed them to me.
Ah.
Okay. And so up at the top, when you open the form up, it should have the name of the form.
Okay,
right at the top of the screen. And what we're interested in is the type of form. And the way you determine that is it's called the file extension. It's dot and then whatever three letters come after that. So if it's a Word document, the two most likely would be Word, which would be a DOC.
Okay.
And the other one is PDF.
I know that. Okay.
Okay. And you do different things, so we need to know which form.
But what you've described, Dorothy, is something that I've run into and probably everybody else has. When you get a form that's in the Word format, when you go to fill in a blank on it, what it does, as she says, it just pushes the line around.
That's right. You end up in the margin.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So you just have to hit delete and delete the underlines, and comes back.
Yeah, we've all dealt with that. Now, I want to suggest another way.
So it is probably a DOC.
It's probably a document.
Word,
then. Okay.
Now, what I want to suggest is one of two things. You could have your son, you said did this for you, right? Have them turn those into PDFs. PDFs. Now, I'll tell you why. Because when you fill in blanks on PDFs, my experience is you don't get that shifting going on.
Yeah, depending on what type of PDF he does. And if he just turns it into a normal PDF, you can't edit it at all. And that'll be a problem.
He has to make it sure that it's writable. An editable or a writable PDF.
That's correct.
Okay?
And how difficult is that?
Not difficult. There are things you can go online and do that. I have a piece of software on my computer that I use that turns Word documents into PDFs. And I would just tell your son, if you love your mother, turn these documents into PDFs.
Well, I mean, Word itself, if you go to Save As, you have the PDF option.
Yes,
it's right
there,
built
yes.
in. So you don't need any special program.
But
so
it has to be a
PDF is the answer.
Yeah.
No, it has to be a writable PDF. So if you just tell him PDF, you won't be able to use it at all.
So it's a writable?
A writable
and
PDF.
And if he doesn't have the right technology, he'll have to go online. Now, you can go online, and they're free. You can find the software package.
Okay.
But just tell him that your dear mom wants you to take this Word document and turn it into a writable PDF. And do you have any other thoughts, Bill?
There's one other thought. It's buried deep in the largest recesses of Office somewhere. It's actually a way to change the cursor from insert mode to overtype mode.
Oh, that's
a long, complicated thing.
I wondered if the word insight had something to do with it.
Yeah, but if you can have your son, who loves you very much, just look on the internet. Just Google Office Word overtype mode, and you'll get a bunch of pages with directions on how to turn that feature on.
There you go.
Oh, wonderful. Well, so I appreciate it. You want to know what happened? When I called you, I waited online,
yes.
and I listened to the handyman. I was going to listen to him anyway.
There you go.
Good. He's good.
He is a good. So we are providing you with a handyman kind of solution here that you can get your son to look for. So the two things, one would be the PDF thing, but the other thing may be quite simpler. You can start working with the document you have right now. And again, Bill, what would you look for with the question?
Looking for overtype mode. It's just take the word over and the word type, put them together with the word mode after that, and you've got
overtype mode.
The secret to that. It's from way back when.
And Dorothy, will you please email us and let us know what happened with this?
You want me to send the form?
There you go. And you can also just let us know how it went with the transferring your Word document into something that you can fill in the blanks on.
Okay.
All right.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you so much. Dorothy, our last caller here today. Just remind you, by the way, that on these days, matter of fact, throughout the sports season, very often we find ourselves in a place where we don't have that second hour of the program, which you normally have live, open for people to call in on WJR. And that's precisely the time when you can get hold of us through our email. And you do that by going to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, and then in the upper right-hand corner along the toolbar there, you'll find the contact button. Click on that contact button, and you'll find an email form that comes down, and you can fill in your name and all the other information there. And by the way, you may find a line that says website. Put our website in there. That's all. InternetAdvisor.net. And you're all set. And then put in your question and send it to us. We love to answer them throughout the week, and we'll include them in our program on Saturday.
We love it. Yes, we do.
We do. Thank you so much, Shane, for coming in here and helping out today.
Oh, yeah. Love it.
We had a thorny one. Bill, thank you again for being here, too.
Oh, thanks for having me once again. Great place to spend my Saturday.
And Gary Baker, as always, good to have you, too.
And as always, it's a pleasure.
And don't forget, folks, on Sunday night, we will publish both hours of our podcast. And you can hear our conversation with our first guest, which is Sarah Mitroff, talking about three ways to get your hands in Office 2016. And then we talk with interesting young man, Vincent Fiorentini, who has developed an app to help people who are colorblind like me to see colors now. And then also hear about our helping to people to answer their questions about problems they're having on the Internet. All that part of the Internet Advisor.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net and look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.